Again, as Dana said, I'm employed by Palmer College, and that's about it. Before I start, I'd like to point out the fact that when we talk about attitudes, what we're really talking about, attitudes influence behavior. Attitudes also affect what students want to learn or what students are interested in learning. The thing to remember is that attitudes can change over time. Attitudes definitely, if you have a role model can help you change attitudes, direct observation, or simply repetition, whatever. So attitudes are subject to change. However, the main thing that we have to remember is that when our students come to us, for the most part, where are they coming from? They're coming from some sort of contact with a chiropractor, whether it's from a chiropractic family or, you know, observing in a chiropractic office. So that's basically where our students get their attitudes. So I thought I'd see, well, what are some of the attitudes out there? I try to look to see if there was any wellness statements from the ICA, and unfortunately I couldn't find any. I found out that there definitely was an ACA chiropractic wellness campaign back in 2000, and one of the things that I noticed was that there was a health and wellness advocate position there with the ACA, and as you can see, those are some of the things that the ACA tends to advocate in terms of health and wellness. So the next thing was to sort of take a look and see when our students talk about wellness, what they're really talking about is what they've noticed in a chiropractor's office, or basically maintenance care is really what they are talking about when they talk about wellness. And so when we, so what I try to find is, you know, what is maintenance care? What is it that these students talk to are trying to say when they come and they tell me, well, we practice wellness all the time. I mean, we're basically wellness providers. That's what we do. Well, let's see, what is the composition of maintenance care? Supposedly exercise. I don't know what the other 3% are doing if they're not adjusting, but anyway. dietary recommendations. And again, there weren't too many specifics about patient education, about lifestyle. But again, our students walk in quite happy, quite satisfied with the fact that, by all means, they are providing wellness care, and as you can see, about 25% of chiropractic visits are wellness care. So everything's fine, everything is great. You know, where's the problem? Well, the problem is in comes CCE and come in the wellness competencies, and again, we start talking about things like physical activity, overweight, you know, the leading health indicators. I'm not going to go through all of them. And all of a sudden, to our students, it's a big, how do I work this thing? It's that guy, okay? It's medicine. It's not chiropractic, it's not prevention, it's not public health, but to them, the obvious things when they look at that is, that's out of our realm, that's really within the medical realm. Of course, Palmer College had a very different response. Palmer College immediately put together a wellness committee that was, by the way, the competencies came into effect as of February 2007. The wellness committee was established in the middle of about 2006. So number one, the wellness committee obviously wanted to get the word out, so we had plenty of faculty development workshops to talk about these issues. We also, and I say we because I was on the wellness committee, okay, so as part of the wellness committee, we also looked at the patient health intake questionnaire and changed a few of the main suggestions for change, which were accepted by the clinic administrators in terms of adding some of those aspects, you know, asking patients, do you have any concerns about your sexual relationships, about your sexuality? Do you have any questions in terms of violence? I mean, we added a few of the leading health indicator types of things that were not asked previously on the patient health questionnaire. And what we try to do for the student is we try to give them sort of a worksheet so that if patients said, I'm interested in alcohol, you know, I'm concerned about how much I drink, or if I want to do tobacco abatement, or if I want to do some of these things, where the student working with the patient could actually sort of know how to follow up, could make some notes, could then get some suggestions as to what they could do. Another thing that we did is we try to assess where in the curriculum do we actually teach some of these wellness concepts and prevention concepts. And again, the most important thing is, you know, as we've been talking here, again, Your role models are your clinicians, the people that are in the clinic that are actually working in, you know, with the students on a one-to-one basis. This is really where the students are going to learn. This is really where they're going to pick up more of their attitudes and how they're going to practice. And then the last thing that we're still working on is wellness resources. You know, we don't expect any chiropractor to spend 30, 40 minutes talking about here's what you should do to stop smoking, or here's your nutrition, or here's whatever. But we'd like to give them local resources and national resources where they could go find some of this information. So again, for my own and Dana, I didn't ask, but anyway, for my own information, what I try to do is figure out, well, what do my third trimester students, because I teach an immunology class and it's in fourth tri that we teach the public health class. So I try to figure out for my third trimester students, from a chiropractic perspective, guys, what do you think is important when it comes to patient care? And you know, again, remember the maintenance care issues? No problem. Maintenance care issues, the things that chiropractors normally see their patients for, everybody agreed. Exercise, nutrition, this was very much in the chiropractic domain. Safe sexual practices, 273 students, not a single one thought that that was important. Immunizations, 6% thought that that was important. And violence, again, no one thought that that was important. Basically, this was, I give them an immunology test, and I put down optional. You know, you don't have to answer. And then I simply list, one of the things I asked was simply, you know, immunizations, yes, no, and then the others I more or less had them sort of list in order of importance. And sexual safe practices and violence were not even listed. So, you know, it would have been like an A, B, C, D, E answer or whatever, D and E. Sexual practices, violence, not even on there. Again, so then I sort of have an idea when they come into fourth tri, when I'm starting to work with them in fourth tri and teaching them public health as to what's going on. Well, obviously one of their major stressors is Part 1 national boards. Now, I don't know, some of you graduated more recently. I don't know how many of you remember your Part 1 national boards, but I can assure you that I sat on the national board testing committee 23 years ago. I know because that's when my son was born. Okay. what I remember is that the questions really have not changed from that time till now. And what the National Board primarily tests over under the topic of public health is agencies, potable water treatment, waste treatment, and a few other assorted things about what I call my worms and germs. All right, so when I read Dr. Johnson's statement there that some people associate public health with bacteria, sewage, and potable water, oh, my blood pressure went up a little bit, and I thought to myself, you know, unfortunately, chiropractic students do associate public health with those topics, and the reason that they do that is because that is what is tested on the board. And by the way, I've communicated with Dr. Christensen for years, and there is good news. There is a Delphi study coming out. It will definitely eliminate some of this, and it will put some of the wellness questions on there. So if you have any influence in your institutions in terms of accepting that Delphi study, I would encourage you to do so. Anyway, so now when it comes to wellness and NBC materials, obviously for students there's a huge dichotomy. We're talking something here in public health, and that's not what they're seeing. That's not what they're being tested over. So first of all, students say, well, we don't have enough education. And when I say students say here, what I'm doing now with my public health class is, even though I have 150 students in the class, I meet 8 times a week with about 20 to 25 students, and we sit around and we discuss chapters out of a book called Community Health by McKenzie. So we're reading chapters in a book and we're coming in and we're discussing them. So one of the things that the students always tell me is, number one, we don't have enough education to counsel patients, and number two is this is medical. I mean, that's one of their biggest issues. And then again, as I said, about 6% said that immunizations are a topic for chiropractors. And again, I unfortunately have to agree with this particular statement that when our students talk about immunization as being a choice, they're usually talking about the choice is that you do not need to vaccinate. So once again, time in the classroom saying, please inform me. Most of you have been immunized. Most of you have come, you know, from a society where immunizations are acceptable. What has happened? What has changed? Unfortunately, who gives you a vaccination? Medical doctors. So again, this is no different than handing out antibiotics. This is no different than doing anything else in their perception. This is basically pushing drugs. And again, there's always that, well, there's got to be some cutback. There's got to be something that doctors are getting to push all of these immunizations. Another thing, not directly, but indirectly, I am told that philosophy classes somewhat also support this view of vaccination. And again, I hear from those that are daughters and sons of chiropractors, well, I wasn't immunized. I didn't get the illness. They forget about herd immunity. And of course, there's the big one. I get chiropractic care. I'm under maintenance care. I'm not going to get sick. And there's peer group opposition to immunization. It's very strong. If some student says, well, I have a baby, I'm thinking of immunizing, 10 come on them and say, don't you dare. And unfortunately, that does happen. And obviously, immunizations carry a risk. But of course, you know, their weekend binging doesn't. They're smoking, they're drinking, they're marijuana, there's, you know, sexual practices of having, you know, non-protected sex. We don't worry about that, but we do worry about immunizations carrying a risk. And then again, they truly, truly lack a global view. The next thing I sort of looked at, and because some of the things I hear, well, why do we have to do this when medical doctors don't have to do this? So I looked to see. And again, I picked just one survey, but the idea is that I've looked at several other surveys. And again, even for medical schools, in terms of health promotion and prevention, values, the student values, what they come in with very much do affect their subsequent practice. And here's something even scarier, that as the students go through the curriculum, they actually focus less on prevention. And what the other studies indicated was that whether the students follow through with promotion or not was really more dependent on the climate on their campuses as to how much their campuses promote wellness, and also on personal factors, whether the students were interested. I thought it was interesting that the recommendations were that prevention classes should be taught by credible clinicians that are key role models and opinion leaders, and that really is what has to happen in chiropractic colleges. Basically, we need to do the same thing if we're talking about wellness and prevention care. We do need to make sure that our clinicians are credible and that they are the role models. I thought it was interesting that they're also looking at maybe how should we look at the students that we're bringing in terms of prevention. Again, remember, Healthy People has been around for over 20 years now almost. And when I looked at, I'm sorry, I couldn't find anything more recent, but when I looked at a survey done back in 2001 of 68 medical schools sort of participating in a student medical association, at that time about 31% had wellness training classes and about 41% had wellness lectures. So again, the medical profession isn't pushing that either. So folks, we're really looking at a cultural transformation that has to take place. First of all, as faculty, we need to be able to empower our students to, you know, be able to have that role of a primary healthcare provider so that they feel secure that they can talk to patients about prevention. Again, the National Board should really, really reinforce the importance of wellness at all levels, because truly, what do students focus on? I have to take a board. I've got this board. I've got that. I'm studying for boards. So if the boards did this, we would obviously have enforcement. Clinicians in our institution should act as role models, and folks, the profession really must become more involved with community level health care issues, because again, we're acting as role models. And again, our role is mentors. Folks, students haven't heard of Healthy People 2010, and many of our colleagues haven't, that we should definitely do something there. Clinicians, especially because they are role models, have to become more aware of these public health issues. And last but not least, we should examine our role in getting non-members involved in APHA. And again, don't do as I say, but do as I do. I got you one. I can't get you 160, but I got you one, Rand. Thank you.
for some questions.
Yes.
On your list of wellness issues that you posted, tobacco wasn't listed as one of them.
Oh, it was.
Not on the six that you listed.
No.
But I'd just like to follow up with another comment. There was a poster presentation downstairs earlier of from the University of Arizona Public Health College, which I'm attending, by someone who did a study of CAM practitioners and asked in a survey how many were taught about tobacco in their curriculums. And within the chiropractic section of the survey, of which 90 people were surveyed, 30% had tobacco indicated as having been mentioned within their classroom instructions, whether by cessation of tobacco use or the harms of tobacco use whatsoever, but it was a very small percentage.
Okay, the reason that I did not include that was because I just try to get a feel for myself in third trimester as to what's coming into my fourth trimester class. In my fourth trimester class, as we read that textbook on community health, there is an entire chapter on alcohol, on tobacco, etc. So I'm simply hoping that my students are going to get the message. But gee, maybe next year I can come back and tell you what percent of our 10th tri students actually feel that they have sufficient education on some of these topics. Thank you. I might have something to come back and read next.
Other questions?
Question for Will. All the colleges transition to tables and thought of our address. We don't recommend them, but who reads journals?
Well, I may have missed it. One of your conclusions was there has to be a policy level decision made and announced, communicated. At the school you did your survey, is there no policy now at all? There's not. Okay. Thank you.
I don't think there's a policy at either of the three, a written policy.
And it might be that the schools are in direct violation of OSHA. That's what I'm thinking.